Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and ideas totally made up on the spot. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my compatriots, as always. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
That is what my parents call me, an idea totally made up on the spot.
Let's not dive into that. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Do you know how sometimes we just do the theme song of the thing that we've been watching?
And that's the end of the show? You want to end the show right now? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
No. Exactly. No, what I'm saying is that, like, at the end of this episode of Biff, the theme song should just be static. Or maybe the test tone. The kind of thing that when you wake up at, like, 3:30 a.m. in the morning and all you've got is, like, UHF. That. That is the sound of this episode of Biff.
That sounds
Keep listening, kids.
Just the white noise.
Yeah.
This episode is about stuff. I don't know what's happening. It's really out of my control at this point. But Guy English assured me he had something to talk about, so I'm putting him right on the spot there.
Oh, wow. I assured you of no such thing. I kept asking.
I have something we can talk about.
All right. John's got a topic, too.
Let's just cut it.
Moving on.
No. Let's set the... Look. This episode's a magazine. Let's give the index here. I'm going to talk about The Boys Season 2, which I've seen. Dan, God knows what you're going to talk about. You haven't even told us that yet. Something new that you've been watching. And John, your topic is...
I only watch things that aired 5 years ago or more.
Smart.
Because I recently rewatched the first season of Daredevil.
Heard of it.
So, shall I go first?
Go first.
Go ahead.
And I have something else that we could talk about too.
Oh, at least, okay. But this John's running the show this week. John, I'm going to sit back, relax, crack a beer.
What's the name of what's the superhero sweep?
Yeah.
How do we do this show again?
We've only been doing it for 60 odd episodes.
I know.
So wait,
they've all been odd. Skip the even ones completely.
I don't know how that works, but it works.
Yeah.
I don't even know how that works.
We've been recording twice as many shows and throwing half of them out is how it works.
And they're all prime numbers. Anyway. After Ted Lasso was over, I guess that was the impetus. I was looking for something to watch just while I make dinner, and I thought, I'll watch Daredevil again. I'm not sure. I feel like maybe it came up on Netflix for some reason. Or it was for some reason I was thinking about
John,
Daredevil.
John, we noticed you haven't watched Daredevil in at least 6 months.
Exactly, yeah. It's you seem like you're due again. And it really holds up, I think. I think the first season, and is possibly even a little bit better than I gave it credit for the first time around, because... I think when I first saw it, I was like, it seems like there's a couple, like, you know, I kept saying that it was, I think it was 13 episodes, that it should have been 10. And I'm not so sure that's necessarily, I think there is a little bit that could be cut still. But on the whole, it's still quite good. And there are definitely some superlative moments in that show. I mean, I have forgotten that the hallway scene is like second episode.
It's early.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Very early. Yeah. It's a really good... I agree with you. It's a really good season. I feel that it's one weakness, aside from its... it doesn't have quite as many ninjas as season two, but there are some ninjas in it, I think, right? I think the last episode has some anticlimactic moments in it. They build really
That's true.
And the last episode is kind of like, oh, it's just a fight. It's just a fight, and his costume is crappier. And
yeah, I think that's the thing. I think they banked a lot on that costume reveal, and it didn't work out that great.
Yeah, agreed.
It did not. It was a downgrade.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
It really was.
I think that's one great reason that they spent so much time in season three putting him back in the black costume.
Exactly.
I think that's a real... I mean, I think... And perhaps season three was just the most recent in my mind, but that's certainly the one that stuck with me. I mean, I like a lot of the first season, but I think I would give the third season just a little bit of an edge there.
I would too. I mean, I've started season two, and I'm probably going to just go through the whole thing.
Season two, not great.
season two is a bit of slug.
That is not completely correct. The first half of it is awesome.
You're right. The Punisher bit is good.
The Punisher bit is so great. I mean, that whole conversation with the two of them on the top of the roof is just. I skipped through some of season one, which maybe made it a little bit Maybe that's why it seemed better. I skipped a lot of like Fisk talking to Vanessa.
Vanessa,
which is a fine, it's a fine relationship, and I think it's a necessary part to sort of humanize him.
He needs to be a villain whose motivation you understand, even if it's broken. Otherwise, he's just this. He's a facade, right? He's like the evil that happens to dress in a white coat, but he's. By giving him Vanessa, they make him a little bit more of an adversary.
Yeah.
Rather than a brick wall that Daredevil has
although
to punch.
Although it's certainly a lot of, you know, weight to put on, you know, like, how do we humanize this guy? Let's use a woman to humanize this guy.
Right.
Definitely. But you also cast Vincent D'Onofrio, who...
Yes, who is great.
Who can act. So... In terms of the writing, I think that's a I think it's a trope too often to fall back on writing a woman in order to humanize a man. That's kind of a bummer.
Yep.
On the other hand, you did cast Vincent D'Onofrio,
One of the nice things about it is she is just as sort of ruthless as he is.
Yes. Yeah. In a different way.
Like trying to talk him out of anything by any stretch of the imagination. She just wants to know what's going on. You know, she wants to be a part of the world that he's in. And in the comic book, she ends up being, she ends up leading the show for a while. And then I'm sure the stories go back and forth, but at one point they are adversaries, right? Because I think she takes over his business.
I really liked about the portrayal in that season was that she was not eager to be evil, but she did want to know everything that he was doing. Like, she was okay with, she loved him. You could tell that she loved, well, in a weird way, but she loved him. And she kind of didn't care about all of the evil that he was getting up to. She just didn't want to be treated like a fool. Right. Or to be kept from it. And he had a hard time doing that because he wants her to see him as being a good guy, as the facade that he portrays to the rest of the city in a way. And while he was willing to let her in a little bit, it wasn't completely, and she was frustrated with that. Never to the degree of like dumb Arrow style. Not dumb, but you know what I'm like? More soap operatic style conflicts between the two characters, but it was there, right? There was always that tension there of like, she wants more from him than he can give her, and he can't give her that because by doing so he admits to himself that he's consumed by basically being a bad guy.
Right.
Yeah. I you know, something interesting I was thinking about while you were talking about this is I did see I occasionally read the junkie blogs that always like posit these terrible superhero theories. But one of them, and I have no idea if there's any solid grounding in this, but mentioned that the Disney Netflix deal essentially expired 2 years after the cancellation of the shows, in terms of character rights, I think, suggesting that perhaps those, I think now we've passed the 2 year mark of the cancellation of Iron Fist, that they're all in theory back character rights wise, let's be clear, not the shows. Are back in Disney's court, which is an interesting question. Marvel / Disney.
You said Disney. I thought you said DC.
What am I?
Give it a year.
Just give it one more year. On comic books or
you're
not?
More monster than man, Dan.
That's true.
What happens when Disney owns both DC and Marvel?
crossovers galore.
Galore is what's going to happen.
Crisis on infinite Earths. But what I was going to say was, I feel like at least half, if not all, of those characters are big enough that Marvel will want to do something with them in the MCU eventually. I mean, and this is the whole like, are these or are these not MCU shows is a separate matter. Like, are they canon or are they not canon? But I'm interested in whether the company will try to salvage anything from these. We've seen from like the Spider-Man stuff that's currently happening, like the J.K. Simmons appearance in Far From Home and these Jamie Foxx rumors, that there's certainly the ability to draw in previous adaptations in some way. It's just a question of what exactly the company wants to do with those properties.
They have a lot of moving parts now, though. And it's true. I doubt that they're going to get to it soon, because they now have the X-Men and the Fantastic Four. So I would imagine they're probably going to start with those rather than revisit the Netflix characters.
Yeah, the Netflix characters are much more recent, too. I mean,
yes.
And
better done
than most of those. Yes.
Than most of the other ones. Right.
Yeah. So. I mean, although, you know, it's certainly hard to imagine. I have trouble imagining anybody but Hugh Jackman playing Logan. I mean, it can be done. It's fine. Anything can be done. But
I know he certainly has made that character what it is today.
Yes.
Right. It's not only can be done, it's going to have to be done at some point.
Eventually. Right? Sure.
Yeah. The thing with being
in leaving money on the table.
Right. Which, you know, I'm going to guess.
Disney's not going to do.
I don't know. I think Disney's the kind of company like Apple that I think will leave short-term money on the table in order to reap rewards later on.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole concept of a Disney vault is a fallacy. Is it?
I mean, well,
maybe a little
there's
bit.
There's the one where Walt's head is.
Well, yeah.
There's definitely that vault.
That one. But so the idea of restricting movie sales or movie rentals to a certain period is more or less a fabrication, or at most, at best, a holdover from cinematic distribution, right? It's like, well, you didn't get to see that movie when it came out. Now that we have got videotape, we still like getting that bump every now and then on our profits. So we're going to just artificially restrict you rather than raising the baseline. We're just going to restrict it to like, hey, every now and then when we want some money, we'll just release this stuff that we know you all want. What characters from those TV shows do you think could survive more or less intact in an MCU? I'll go first. I think the Punisher seems like the one that you want, but he's not. He's Crossbones. He is gone in a preamble James Bond scene, and Captain America beats the crap out of him, and that's it. He's done. Like, I don't... How does that guy fit in the world?
You think he shows up as like in the same manner as Crossbones and then gets quickly dismissed?
No, I think he's there to shoot a bunch of people robbing a bank or something.
Yeah.
And then so Spider-Man...
But he's not the... You think your point is that he's not the crux of the movie. He's just there to cause initial havoc.
I don't think he can be. I don't think he can slot him into the MCU. He can't... As a bad guy in a Spider-Man movie? Sure. And you know why? He was originally a bad guy for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But as a protagonist of his own right? Maybe.
I don't see it.
Made like
Punisher movies before, and people go to see them, apparently, because they made like four of them or something. I mean, they made some ridiculous number of them.
It was three, I think.
Do watch the one by a friend of the show, Lexi Alexander. That was the best one.
Yeah.
But I think I have to argue. I have to agree with Guy that I don't think that the Punisher as formulated makes any sense in the MCU. The tone is all wrong. And if you there's a question somewhere of if you want to do superhero shows that do not fit within the canvas of the MCU. And I just have a, you know, I think even with stuff that diverges a little bit, where Marvel has had to come up with ways to integrate, like, you know, Ant-Man being sort of a heist thing, right? Like, or Thor having the sort of Shakespearean overtones. Like, you can do all those things, but it has to have a core of it that fits within the brand. And I don't mean to be dismissive of that, but I mean, it's the story you're telling.
I agree with that. I mean, I guess my point was simply that I think that people would go to see a Punisher movie.
If there was just
a Punisher movie.
Yep. I agree with you there, but I think the character doesn't work as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you're right because, I mean, Barenthal is certainly.
He's amazing.
The first, I think, of all the actors from the Netflix movies or from Netflix shows, rather, he's definitely the one who could easily carry his weight in a Marvel movie.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, he's. Yeah. I don't like that character. I was compelled to watch both seasons eagerly when they came out.
Yeah,
predominantly because of his acting and his portrayal of a character that I kind of didn't like, but somehow he made me compelled to watch.
In the comic book, he tends to be too much for me, certainly. You know, he spends most of his time in the two shows eking out revenge for his family dying.
Yeah.
And that's something that you can relate to a little bit, as opposed to in the comic books, I am just going to kill all criminals.
Yes. Right. I mean, well, that is the kind that's of actor, insane. But it is definitely, I think they worked hard to find a way to make it something that would be more relatable. And I think the first season, especially, I feel like has a really solid through line. The second season I liked, but I think we discussed on the show when it ended, like
the
last bit of it really felt like it undermined the entire.
Well, the very last scene, he just walks in with a trench coat and mows down a bunch of people. And it's like, what does this have to do with anything?
Exactly. So I will say
it's different from like Spider-Man defeats his local enemy and then you see him swinging off into the city and like defeating a mugger. That's Spider-Man expanding his purview to be a hero in a local sense into the global, or at least the civic or city sense. Punisher stalking a bunch of people across the street and then murdering them is not that.
Yeah, well, that felt very much like let's make the end of this show essentially a touchstone on who this character is, right? Like, people want to see the Punisher, right? Like, and I think that's kind of what they felt like they were delivering there, and it felt wrong after all the, you know, experiences that he had gone through in the
100%.
What made the show so great was that you could relate to him and...
Right. They wrote him...
And then at the end, it said, well, you're not going to relate to him anymore.
They spent all of that work writing him away from being a guy that would just randomly murder a bunch of people. Yes. And then they're like, okay, guess what? Now he murders a bunch of people. And if they just cut that scene, like, give me the Schneider cut of that.
I was going to say...
Get rid of that.
I would be, I would be okay if they had told it. We've talked in the past about the Hulk show and the
traveling dog show.
Yeah. but like you could imagine the sort of thing where, okay, Punisher rolls into town and helps people out. And yes, he's going to kill a bunch of people at the same time, but he's doing it because he has specific reasons to do it, as opposed to just this blanket statement where I'm going to mow down.
I feel like the MCU has a very strong bad guys kill people, good guys don't kill people vibe. And I think that's why the Punisher would really struggle
for the most part
in the MCU.
I mean, agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they kill a lot of people. They shoot a lot of people. And, you know, some of the time it's icers, but a lot of the time it's not.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I mean, even that we can argue about being MCU adjacent. I think if you put what you put on the screen, at least as far as the movies go, and like we haven't yet seen what the MCU, like official MCU TV shows or Disney Plus shows are, but I have to imagine they will follow a very similar. I don't know. The one question for me is the Loki show, because I think that is potentially has the, you know, the possibility to diverge a bit. But I wanted to say that I think
adult, maybe.
Yeah, possibly. I think the characters who I'm interested, I would really like to see a Heroes for Hire movie.
I think a hard-boiled detective show movie would work.
Yeah, I don't know. Something, you know, something with a better Iron Fist. Bring back Mike Coulter. I know he's busy. He's got a show that's doing pretty well. The rest of the, you know, all the side characters who were so good, I think, in both those shows, and you know, certainly in Iron Fist, the side characters were superior to the main character.
And like, which is like whatever, Finn Jones. I know you're
really
listening.
Is the dumbest but, Iron Fist ever.
I just told him I know he's listening. The way he was written did not bring a lot of credence to that character.
I saw what they were going for, but I think it was less.
Yeah, I don't. I think it was less the actor's fault for sure.
No, it wasn't. The whole thing was not
written well.
Yeah, it was effectively entirely premised upon cultural.
There are ways to reconsider how that character entirely is formulated. I think it's interesting, for example, that Marvel has definitely, I think, decided to push, you know, Shang-Chi as a character.
Yes. I think that's a far better choice.
A smarter play than enjoy certain Iron Fist runs. Like, I think it's clear that is a character who is much trickier to pull off in this day and age.
I would really enjoy an Iron Fist cameo in that movie where he's kind of the goofy white kid. And they're all awesome, but the goofy white kid goes back to goofy New York and he's just awesome. And it's like, well, mostly just because of your... you're better than most other people, but we are so much above you. Like, we're so much better at doing this than you are, but that's cool that you left us. And, you know, we found you in the snow. We trained you. Now you go do that. That's cute. That's cute, kid. Nice work. We're doing real stuff here. That's awesome. Good work.
I'm watching it again. I kind of feel like they will eventually decide that none of that stuff was in the MCU.
Yes.
Oh, none of it is. It's gone. It is deleted.
Too bad. I mean, too bad because Baron, like, you know, I think Barenthal should. It would be great to see Barenthal in.
Yeah. I think, well, here's the thing. You're free to pick and choose, as I think the J.K. Simmons thing points out.
Yes, like, true.
You know what? People will get excited. They'll enjoy the Easter egg. You can have that actor show up and have it not immediately imply the thing is canon, nor you don't have to disprove it either, right? Like, you can just be like, yeah, it's that character. You're free to decide amongst yourselves whether or not you want to include their previous adventures. But I mean, like, I think what's tricky with some of these characters is that I think particularly Punisher and Jessica Jones are the two that I think that would be the hardest to integrate into the MCU as it is now, just based on a tone thing. I think those shows are, like, and characters are both have much more of an edge to them than the MCU currently wants to do. Whether it decides in the future that it wants to be broader about what kind of stories it tells, or it wants to have, you know, kind of like it did with Netflix and have like little pockets where it can tell different types of stories. And I think that's a question it's going to have to deal with in light of, as you mentioned, John, all the Fox stuff that it acquired. I think those two are the hardest sells. I think Luke Cage and Iron Fist, you could find ways with Daredevil. Certainly, I don't think you would tell it in the same way that they told it on Netflix, but I think that character is fine as a character that shows up in the MCU at some point. And I think it's hard to imagine a character with as high a profile as Daredevil that doesn't show up in the MCU at some point down the road.
But he's got to show up in a Spider-Man movie, right? Or maybe a Wolverine movie, like something like that.
Well, that's dicey because I don't think Sony owns the rights to Daredevil. And so the Spider-Man thing, I think, is probably...
They'd have to do some
negotiation.
Marvel would have. I mean, they've done that with, you know, Iron Man and Nick Fury.
So, right. And they have good reason to, right? Like, that keeps them in bed together for a while, is saying, like, all right, we're going to let you use Daredevil, but you have to let us keep integrating Spider-Man into our MCU movies. And hey, that's fine.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway,
I'd watch that movie.
Yeah. All right. Well, we spent a long time on that. Guy, is there something you want to talk about?
First of all, season one, Daredevil, Biff, right?
Biff.
I like them all, frankly. I mean, the second half of the second season is definitely the weakest part of the whole thing, but I still like, but the first half is so strong that I think it's a good season.
Right. So I bring that up because I don't think we covered it. We probably covered it tangentially, but there was a show in The Incomparable. Yeah,
we were just doing Arrow back then, right?
We were just doing Arrow, yeah. But because it was such a compelling show, we were all watching it, so I'm sure there's some content that leaked in there. Yeah. But there was another show on the Incomparable Network that covered Daredevil at the time by our buddy Moe's. I was on it. Dan, were you?
I think I was on it once or twice, yeah.
Yeah. John, did you do one?
I don't think so, but I don't remember.
Okay.
There's a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, whatever. If you're curious about Daredevil, there's a show on the Incomparable for you to go listen to. My topic will take less time because it was The Boys season two. We actually recorded an episode of Boys season one.
I don't think that's true.
Well, it was recorded. It just never went out. I didn't cut it together.
We just talked about the first episode, actually.
Oh, did we?
Because I've only seen the first episode.
Oh, maybe. But I spoke to James Thompson about it.
Yeah.
Was that just the first episode?
Yeah, it was the first episode. Oh, I mean, wow. You might have seen the rest. You two might have seen the rest, and I only watched the first
episode. Wow, I did. So I saw the first episode. You, me, and James Thompson discussed it. I didn't like the way that turned out. Not because of, I don't know. Like, there's sexual assault in that show. It just didn't. Our remarks about that show did not suit Biff. And when I listened to it three or four times when I was trying to edit it, I'm like, there's just things here that I don't feel suit the show. It's very negative. There's a lot of sexual assault. The show does pick up.
So you want to try again?
No, I want to. Here's the thing. What I want to do, and I want to do it gingerly, is recognize that anybody that's interested in superheroes is probably a little bit interested in The Boys. And what I will say about it is this: the first season, especially the first episode, I did not like. I didn't even like the way we spoke about it. And me, by the way, I didn't like my parts. And the culmination is kind of still unsatisfying. Season two is better in that regard. And yet, still not something I feel super comfortable promoting to people. And the reason is that The Boys is a reaction, effectively, to the superhero trope. And the TV show is sort of a reaction to the MCU trope or the CW trope or that kind of thing. And I think there's a lot... I think the viewers of The Boys find some kind of catharsis or some kind of... finally, we're breaking away from the superhero trope story that I think echoes, in a way, the way people read comics in the early 90s. And I think the way The Boys is done on TV is as to, Deadpool, Cable, and a whole bunch of other beloved characters, or the Punisher himself, are done in that era of comics where it's like, okay, we've had all of the fun, now we're going to deconstruct it all. And I think The Boys is sort of maybe a second wave deconstruction, which is interesting as a piece of art, for sure. Does it compel me to watch it? I mean, I guess so. I watch it every week, but I'm not sure that I want to encourage other people to watch it because I don't want to encourage that worldview. I'm not nihilistic.
The reason I like superhero stuff is because it's obviously not part of this world, right? I mean, it's that's the whole point of it. And to say, but what if it was? It's like, okay, well, now you've just ruined it.
Right.
You know? You took the thing that I liked the most about it and you stripped that out.
Right. I mean, and here's the thing.
Interesting. I suppose that is interesting. It's a fair enough thing to do, but I do not need that in my life. And certainly not, you know, in the last 4 years for sure.
My take on that is that The Boys presupposes that superheroes actually have powers, and those powers lead to mass destruction, which seems kind of obvious. I don't know about you guys. I shot a few lasers out of my eyes a few times, and that's a sight I will never forget. Mm-hmm. All red, and it wasn't the laser beams, which is definitely an aspect of the show. But that's not real. I don't think you can take... I'm not sure you can take the super out of superhero without having them also be in a super world of some sort. And placing them in a realistic world is like, yeah, okay, the Flash just murdered 8 people while they ran really fast. Okay, so what?
Yeah.
What, like, yeah, that would suck. What am I learning from that? What am I being taught, as opposed to superheroes, you know, literally, let's forget Highlander. Was that his name? Homelander. Might as well be Highlander. Versus Superman, like truth, justice in the American way. There is a certain amount of terror in that, if you take it as him being an entity that is built into the American government, or any government, any earthly power per se. And they sort of explore that in The Dark Knight and all that. It's again a trope that is not teaching you anything more than that absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Right.
Which we know.
And I don't mind those stories like as one-offs. Like, I mean, right. I've enjoyed some of the DC stuff where, you know, like, what if Superman was raised in the Soviet Union? And I mean, that can be fun for a little while. I don't need an ongoing series of it.
Right. I agree. And the trope of absolute power corrupts absolutely is, I mean, worth retelling,
sure.
But we should be accepting it at the same time.
I can, like I was saying, I can see that in the world.
Right. Oh yeah.
I don't need an object lesson in that, because it's going on all the time right now.
I mean, your object lesson in that is fake voting boxes in California. Anyway. Please go vote. Put your ballots in the correct voting box. Anyway, I don't want to get into it. Just do the right thing. If you're listening to this, I know you want to do the right thing. Just go with your gut and do the right thing. What's interesting about The Boys, though, is that it has an added level of corporate intrigue, where supers are effectively created by the serum, super soldier serum, but it, rather than being controlled by the government, or by foreign governments or foreign powers, whether it be governmental or whatever, doing a super soldier thing. It is controlled by one corporation, the Void Company, and they effectively dole it out until, you know, season 2, I think, it gets stolen. I don't know. I watched them all, and I didn't bother to keep track. Basically, there's a serum that you give, and supers are born, and they could be good or bad. That's interesting, and yet it also rings as a sort of a facile understanding of our world, right? Like, corporations are bad should not be any more shocking, really, than absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Right. It's the same lesson, really. I
mean, exactly. That's exactly it. It's the same lesson on a meta level. Like, rather than being personified in Homelander, it is personified by Voight or whatever. And
Homelander's the time travel one? Is that
Homelander is the superhero analog. Homelander is Superman.
I was trying to figure out why you kept talking about Homelander, the time travel show. Outlander. Okay.
Oh yeah. Outlanders. Yeah. No. Homelander.
Sorry. My bad.
And like, look at
him. Just like, why does he keep talking about this show that we've never talked about before?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No. Homelander.
Talk about Star Trek. Come on.
Well, I'll tell you what. Homelander is the alien Nazi in that episode of Voyager where they travel back in time and they find out that the aliens have actually been driving the Nazi campaign. That worked for you?
The actor?
Sure.
You got me on a stretcher. Here's what I'm saying. The Boys is interesting. I understand why people may find it interesting. To me, a lot of the lessons feel trite and over-exemplified. And if anything, very, very much the comic books of the late 80s. The thing is, the late 80s was a long time ago. And if you need those lessons echoed back to you, I get it. I do. I got it. Especially if you grew up watching visual media and watching all of the MCU stuff and even the stuff we talk about on the CW. If you think that The Boys is your Dark Knight Returns, okay. I disagree with you. I'm kind of bored of that myself, but I understand it. And I guess just to keep the conversation going rather than just lecturing, what's your approach to that kind of material? There is some value to it. Some people may find value to it. I think we're in a space in our lives that we don't necessarily find that.
Well, like I said, I mean, I can take it in very small doses, and I probably prefer it to read it in a comic book rather than see it in a show, I guess, because it abstracts it a little bit more. I think these shows tend to glorify a little bit in the gore aspect. Particularly, I mean, like I said, I only saw the first episode, but the first episode, you know, tries to make a big deal of it, I think, to tell you what kind of a show it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And it's not the show that I, you know, it's not a show that I want to watch. And I am interested in seeing some of these tales told in small doses, but I'm not going to sit through 24 episodes.
I think the challenge for me is these shows sometimes think they're being really smart about how they are portraying these things, and in the end become the thing that they are trying to lampoon. Like the best example I can think of in that regard is the movie Kick-Ass.
Yes.
Which spends a long time trying to make this like satirical take, and literally then in the last like act devolves into exactly the things it was making fun of. And I think there's a struggle there in trying to portray things, but also feeling like, how do you ride that line of, we're going to show you that real superheroes would be really like destructive and gory and all of that, without also kind of using that gore to, I don't think titillate is quite the right word, but like, you know, kind of draw in people because of the fascination with the gore itself. Like, are you still satirizing that thing now, or has it crossed the line into just being that thing, at which point your satire loses its teeth?
So I guess just to tie this back to Daredevil season one, John, you felt that the finale was a little bit trite. I felt the same way too, like beating Kingpin up in an alley is like, who cares, you know?
Well, they made a fairly gritty, realistic show, and then the end, not exactly like Kick-Ass, but it takes a more turn towards, now he's got a costume, and he's a superhero, and
now he can beat this guy up.
Was that really what this show was like?
No, shouldn't he have taken him down in court?
I mean, they
did. For the murder of Ben.
They did.
Basically, Ben, like, he murdered Ben.
So, yeah. You know, it's thrown in there so that he can get a final fight with him, basically.
Yep. Yeah. I think that the ending fight in the fact that every superhero needs, like, movie story feels like it needs to have an ending fight. Boss battle, if you will, is one of the worst things in superhero
like
movies.
Wonder Woman specifically, I really, really, really love Wonder Woman as a movie until the end. And it's like, I don't know what's happening, and I kind of don't care.
My biggest complaint, I'm going to go off topic here for 1 second, but I think I can tie it back in. a lot of people really liked the last Mission Impossible movie, Fallout. It is pretty far down on my list of Mission Impossible movies for a major reason that I think it succumbs to this problem. If you compare it to the movie before it, Rogue Nation, which I think is a fantastic movie and is at the top of my list of Mission Impossible movies, and we can argue that Ethan Hunt is basically a superhero. I think that's where I would put this.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, he's definitely a fair game. Anybody that hangs on the outside of a plane?
Yeah, exactly.
In real life. Like, in real... Tom Cruise is a superhero.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that, but... Okay.
I mean, he's got the problems a superhero might have. Anyway, yes. My point was...
definitely...
The ending, not to...
He drinks a lot of Fresca, let's say that.
And not that to spoil, not to spoil endings, but essentially, I thought what was clever about Rogue Nation is it has an ending in which the heroes outwit the bad guys, whereas in the ending of Fallout, there's literally a like 10-minute fight between Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill, where it's they just punch each other in the face for 10 minutes, and I was so bored by that. I was so very bored by that. And it's like it's spectacle, and there's some great stunts, etc., but I felt like it had lost sight of any sort of knowledge of what makes that franchise fun, which is that our heroes are clever. And that's to me that was disappointing in that movie. Anyways, that was my superhero tie-in there.
And endings are hard.
Agreed.
I've seen lots of movies where you're like, I mean, the worst, I think the worst one is the Wolverine. That is, it's a decent movie. I mean, it's not great, but it's...
Is that the one in Japan?
It's like, this one's okay. And then you get to the end and he's fighting this silver robot thing for 25 minutes. And you're like...
Silver Samurai is a classic Wolverine villain.
Is that the second one? I never saw the first one, which I heard is terrible. The second one, there were parts I liked a lot of. But yeah, it does have some problems. Terrible.
Wolverine Origins is... bad. Like, it's just bad. Apologies to everybody who worked on that. It's bad. I'm sorry. Like, stuff happens. It just didn't come out well. The Wolverine is better.
Right.
And yet, you end up with Samurai Robot versus... Right.
The ending is awful.
Did he even have his adamantium anymore? I can't remember if he had his...
No, because they had leached it out of him, right? That was...
We've all been learning this.
It was just...
It's already ruined. Not, so.
Pre-ruined.
Yeah, right. No, it's ruined as soon as like you press play. Like, forget it. That $2.99 or whatever it is, it's just gone. Yeah.
Should I talk about my brief topic?
I think we're done.
We could be.
I think
we're good. Fine. I don't need to talk about this.
We don't need your input.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody, this week. It's been a real pleasure.
You get a good minute and a half, Dan.
Actually don't need much more than that, because I'm going to say I just watched the first episode of this show yesterday, and I would argue that there's a super heroic quality to it, though it is a show based... it's a fictionalized version of history, and that show is The Right Stuff on National Geographic, which is part of Disney Plus, which is an adaptation, obviously, of the Tom Wolfe book, done with Patrick J. Adams, who was on Suits as John Glenn, and Jake... I'm going to screw up his name. Jake McDornan? Jake Dornan as Alan Shepard. Jake McDorman. I liked the first episode. It's interesting to watch it in a... era when I watched For All Mankind, which covers very similar ground but does it with an interesting twist, whereas this is just straight up kind of an adaptation of what actually happened. But if you are a fan of 1950s 1960s space program stuff, I think it's probably worth your time at least check out the first episode. So
where can we find
it? On Disney Plus. National Geographic channel is doing it.
And speaking of Disney and movie stuff, maybe I don't know if we were going to talk about this in Superhero Sweep, but if you own a bunch of Marvel movies, you may find that they're 4K now, right?
Yep.
Through iTunes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got all 4Ks. Not 5G, but 4K.
Well, damn it, why can't I get 5G movies?
5G, 5G, 5G.
You're going to need some LiDAR for that. That's all.
Is this phone 5G?
No.
That, honestly, Dan, I think that's probably the best recommendation we've given this
I mean, I'm
this episode
heavily.
I haven't even seen
that.
It, but I trust you. So
I'm heavily caveating that with the fact that I've seen literally one episode, and I think only two are currently out. So
yeah, but we just talked about The Boys for like 10 minutes, and yeah. You know,
and we're saying don't watch The Boys,
right?
Even so, the guy watched all of it.
Yeah, but I do a lot of dumb stuff. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed me showing up to this show every week, but, you know.
I have a friend who saw Aquaman at least twice in the theater.
Oh, Jesus.
And he does not defend it in any way. He knows it's a bad movie. And it was like over Christmas and he was visiting family, and I think he just wanted to get away from family for the most part.
It's not somebody I know, is it?
Twice in the theater, but he's watched it a bunch of times since it's come out on video, too. It's like, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know.
It's a fair question.
I feel the same way about how often I watched The Phantom Menace.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I saw that movie so often. Well. Oh, my God. I had a movie cinema right across the street from me, and it was bananas. I would cross the street and I would pay them like $3.99 at the time and sit through another, whatever the runtime is, mm-hmm. and come out and being like, I don't think I got it.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I went back to see it a second time. I was like, maybe I missed something.
Yeah, I saw twice.
I did not miss anything.
I saw twice within the first 24 hours, and we had barely slept, so... that's what I'm going to blame on that. It took like 4 or 5 viewings before it was like, wait, is this movie maybe bad?
Not good.
Yeah. At a certain point, I think I had to admit to myself that I was going to go see this movie just for the popcorn and the Coke. Like, that was my...
You can get those things at home.
The Coke. Cocaine's hard to get at home. You got to go to a movie
theater.
Easy
to get in a theater, though.
The dealer's in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, back in The Phantom Menace, that was actually the Phantom Menace. Cocaine. They were just giving Coke to everybody.
That explains how it got greenlit.
Yeah.
Hey-o. Anyway, are we going to do a... Do you guys want to do a quick superhero
sweep? Yeah, let's do a superhero sweep.
Okay. Let's do a sweep.
Do a quick superhero sweep. I don't think we discussed last week the further announcement. We knew there was an HBO Max Green Lantern show coming, they have said a little bit more about that now, specifically calling out it includes, I think, basically few of the most well-known Green Lanterns, and instead the ones that they mention are, I think... and of course, this page that I'm looking at has frozen with an ad on it. So thanks for that variety. Guy Gardner, Jessica Cruz, Simon Baz, and Alan Scott. Alan Scott, of course, being the Golden Age Green Lantern, who is, I think, has been kind of hinted at on Stargirl. But never, I think, not seen. There was a lantern which resembled his lantern.
Yes, Stargirl and Pact of Lantern that looked very much like the Scott Lantern.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately a lot of these companies are going to start banking on the crisis out of, so Doctor Strange is going to have multiple timelines and it's all going to collapse and you're not going to have to worry about all of the weird stuff we've done before. And I just suspect that, you know, these DC shows will not have to worry about it.
Well,
they will just do whatever they want. What's on HBO Max? People who are watching HBO Max have not watched season one episode, 8 of Stargirl?
No, I don't think that's true either. I mean, I think I'm not too worried about that. I just think I think what's interesting about this is that they're focusing on characters supposedly, right? Like it says it will depict the adventures of a multitude of lanterns and it mentions those characters, not mentioning the two probably most prominent Green Lantern characters who are Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart. Obviously, mm-hmm. we saw Arrow season 8 basically made it clear that John Diggle is more or less John Stewart. I don't think that they're probably going to go anywhere with that, but you know, never say never in this world. And
yeah, he's specifically not mentioned in the HBO casting.
Yes,
right?
Like kind of conspicuous. Both he and Hal Jordan kind of conspicuously given.
Right, the two big ones that you would know are gone, which is.
It's an interesting choice. Doesn't mean that they're not in there either, right? They may be holding that back. Right. They may come up in later seasons if this show goes on. But I think it also points out to a more diverse crew of Green Lanterns, right? Because you've got Jessica Cruz, who I believe is Latina. You've got Simon Baz, who is Muslim and the first Middle Eastern American Green Lantern Corps member. You've got Alan Scott, who is gay in the comics and in this show, reportedly. And then you also include some of the other, members of the Green Lantern Corps, characters like Sinestro and Kilowog, as well as they mentioned adding new characters as like to the list as well. So I think there's a cool idea in there, and I think there's a lot of potential for a show that, especially, frankly, stays off Earth. Like, if you want to make this more of like a, I don't know, like a Guardians of the Galaxy style thing, where it's like there's a bunch of Green Lanterns out there and they're dealing with some threat in space, and it's like kind of a fun sci-fi show with a superhero twist, I think that could be cool. I would definitely watch it. But yeah, I think that the Green Lantern, the biggest thing is that they're trying to get away from the movie, right? Which did poorly, even though Mark Guggenheim,
why would they be doing that?
Mark Guggenheim, who wrote the movie and show ran Arrow for a while, is also working on this project. So
that's okay. You know what? Every now and then you pitch a dud.
Yeah, sure.
It's fine. It's fine.
Well, Feige worked on the first Hulk.
Yeah,
movie as well, which didn't turn
sure
off.
I mean, good. All these things, you're working at a company or you're writing something, and who knows whether or not it ends things up reflecting just, your vision. Hollywood is a big mess. It's hard to point the finger of blame.
It's not Hollywood. It's just, here's the thing, I want to expand that to human effort. How many columns have you guys written that you're just not happy with?
None.
But had to hit
with everything.
They had to hit a deadline. They had to hit a deadline, and you were like, okay, good enough. Come on.
Oh, easily once a month, if not more.
No, it's less than once a month.
No, it's not.
I mean, both of you. So, okay. Well, I don't detect the duds the way you do. What I'm saying is that, look, you know, every now and then you pitch a stinker. That's fine.
Right.
I don't think that has to echo back on being like, oh, you know what? This person's never going to do anything good ever again.
Well, I don't know. If you do season one of Iron Fist and then you turn around and your follow-up to that is Inhumans, I think maybe you
should take say your follow-up is
that's,
season two of
Iron
Fist.
Sit down and think about what you've done.
No, because that's not one stinker. That's 48 stinkers in a row, which I think is probably past the limit. You know, the limit's like, I don't know, 5, 10
yeah,
kind of thing.
Especially if you're a white guy, in which case it's a lot higher.
Yeah, if you're a white guy, you can go up to the thousands for sure.
Yeah, they'll give you millions of dollars to let you remake a movie.
Yeah, that guy's got to be working some.
Oh my God! It's usually me that's. Really? Do you want to talk about that cut?
No, I don't. I don't. I was making a snide comment.
I feel like you were...
Snide. I said snide. That's all I said. I stopped. I said snide comment.
I know. I love you, brother. You're the best.
Anyway, I'm excited to check out that show just because I think Green Lantern is one of those properties that I think has not had a really great adaptation other than that Green Lantern animated series from several years ago, which is quite a bit of fun and a shame that they didn't let it continue.
It's honestly good. It was so good that I don't know, I found it on my Canadian Netflix at one point. And when I started watching it, I started texting you, Dan. And I'm like, have you seen this? Because it's good. It's actually worth watching.
Yeah.
It is, make no mistake, a comic book show. It is for sure a comedic show. Well, I don't know if it's comedic, but it is a more lighthearted show for maybe a younger age group than somebody who may enjoy The Boys. And after you've got over The Boys, you may enjoy that show again, because it's actually pretty good. And it, you know, I hope that this new Green Lantern show follows a little bit of that ethos where the Lanterns are, if by lore, I guess, selected for their fidelity to courage and honor and respect, right? Like, I forget the actual attributes that a lantern is expected to have.
Look good and green, I think, is the only thing that really matters.
Cut, clarity, and
carrot.
Yep. Carrot. Is that what I can't
ability to eat
word.
Carrots.
What I like about the Green Lantern Corps is color. That color. It is intrinsically diverse, right? Doesn't have to be. They could have driven them. They could have drawn them all and written them all as basically humanoids or even humans. And yet there's like a planet that is a Green Lantern. There's bugs, there's insects, there's all kinds of weird stuff, blobs. They're Green Lanterns. I'm part of the Green Lantern Corps. And in that way, I'm sort of excited about what they're doing with the representation, is that somebody like Hal Jordan, the test pilot, jock, affluent guy, mm-hmm. connected to the U.S. military industrial complex, yeah, right. Is somehow the oddball out. That's cool. I like it. I like it's like, you know what? Everything that you thought you were proving was wrong, and now you need to actually prove your humanity. I think that's a pitch worth having at least a few episodes for. Right. I think that's decent, right? So I'm eager to see what they have to produce. And of course I want to see John Diggle. Of course. But
who doesn't?
You know.
Who doesn't? Come on. Yeah. Cast David and Ramsey, you cowards.
Right. Unless they put him in that stupid Argus uniform. Don't bother with that.
The mall cop uniform.
Please don't do that.
Yeah.
All right. Any other topics we got for Superhero Suite? But there's something else you guys wanted to discuss really quick?
Well, they showed a still from the MODOK show.
Oh, yes. Right.
Which looks delightful.
The animated MODOK show. I saw a couple different stills, and it's about him being like navigating being married. Voiced by Patton Oswalt, who is who has long been wanted to be play MODOK. I think there's been like long running jokes about that.
Yeah.
Looks funny. Definitely we'll check that out. It feels like it could be like a Lower Deck style like Marvel show, right?
Right, right. And that was going to be one of my comments about in this episode. We ran out of things to say, but we seem to be doing almost an hour. It's simply that I am looking forward to them doing some other types of shows, because most of the shows and most of the movies are, you know, standard superhero fare. And in varying degrees, and you know, and some are funnier than others, and that's great. But I mean, I think that they could branch out even more. So I'm kind of excited to see how this turns out.
Yeah, it looks a little bit. I was gonna say the style looks very Robot Chicken.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's the same people.
Is it the same people? Yeah, because it's short. It's like a stop motion animation.
Yeah, it's the same design team. It's got the same sort of even the same concept of like, hey, what would Darth Vader do when he's not murdering a bunch of people? Yeah. It's like, okay, going home and like hanging out with people, and like the coffee machine doesn't work, that kind of thing. Is, you know, it's that style of humor, which I enjoy, and I'm eager to watch that show. I think it'd be great. One thing that came up, and since we haven't done a Star Trek segment, and we may as well go out on it at warp speed since Discovery just did today, how Lower Decks?
What is?
How'd you like it?
I thought it was great. Yeah, it grew on me. It started a little slow, but by the end, I was 100% on board.
And I think you have to accept it for what it is, which is, you know, a lot of it is Star Trek homage stuff. I mean, one of the things that I love so much about it is the Easter eggs and the things that they, you know, the little tidbits that they throw in. I mean, it's still fairly funny on its own, but I mean, I don't think it would be anything without it being in the Star Trek universe. Of course,
it needs to couch its humor in Star Trek. Otherwise, yes, it would only be a so-so animated show. But the fact that it leans into that in the same way that any animated show leads into like some kind of genre, I think it really works here.
Yeah.
It's clear how much the writers and creators love Star Trek, especially TNG. And I mean, you know, we would just laugh every week at the credit sequence. Like, like it's just such a throwback to the 90s Star Trek shows.
Yeah.
With its own twist. And I will, despite the humorous element of it, I will throw down and say that Mariner is one of the great Star Trek characters. I think she is incredibly well developed as a character and incredibly complex as a character, and a very much a character that is of a type we don't ever really see in Star Trek.
Which is someone
who's incredibly competent, but also devoted to being an underachiever.
She's a Miles O'Brien with a worse attitude. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I'm going to go do the right thing and everybody's going to kind of disrespect me, but whatever.
I mean, without making this too much of a an issue, I feel like she's the kind of person who in TOS era, they'd be like, give this woman a starship, right? But she's not a white guy like Kirk, so they don't.
Yeah.
Right.
But she's basically kind of what Kirk is.
Certainly in the movie, yeah.
Yes, 100%. And
J.J. Abrams.
I feel like it's just like somebody who wasn't given that opportunity, though. And I will say, the last two episodes in particular, I think are a tour de force. They're just really great. Yeah.
They're very strong.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And the reason I wanted to bring that up on our superhero show was my...
Guys, it's been a pleasure being on your show. I look forward to seeing how you edit it. Thanks for having me on.
On dance. Oh, here's why I skipped that. The sentence was my opinion on our superhero show, and it got reshuffled. That show generally is it's goofy, it's silly, it makes fun of Star Trek, and if you can't enjoy the goofiness of Star Trek, I think you've been doing it wrong. Ted Cruz, I think you're horrible. But, man, what an enjoyable show. And the finale was an honest to God, no jokes, great episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
If you'd expanded that to like a two-parter, that's like the Packlets effectively becoming as badass as the Borg. That's a step up. I really think that it's a show worth watching. And, you know, if you like superheroes, I don't know of many more superheroes other than A, people who vote in the correct ballot boxes, and B, people who watch Star Trek and superhero shows.
That's a good point.
And the most super of all is people who, you know, listen to Biff.
That's right. Speaking of which,
who read this show?
Is it? Are we done? Is it time for us to wrap up here?
Yeah.
All right. We are going to wrap up here. I know this is the show where we said we have nothing to talk about, and we went on for an hour anyways. Because
it happens every time.
Proving that we can totally.
I think
that
we kept it to an hour, assuming we can wrap up in the next 2 minutes.
You're welcome.
Hey.
Oh, no.
No.
I've got four letters. Do you want to talk about those?
No.
Save them.
The beginning of
the
H.
Bank them.
We'll talk about them next week.
Well, yeah, next week when we also have nothing to talk about. Yeah. Thank you out there for listening along. As always, I would like to thank my co-hosts. Guy English, thanks for being here.
Oh, you don't mean that, but I love you anyway.
John Maltz, always a pleasure.
Yeah, live long and prosper, everybody.
I guess this is a Star Trek show now.
Star Trek show now.
I guess the memo is just coming across my desk.
Worth closing the show out. We're doing a superhero sweep. Come on.
That's fine. Readers, thanks for flipping those pages, looking at our pretty pictures, reading those words that we wrote down for you. We really appreciate it and all your support. We'll see you next week. There's a song I had stuck in my head for a little while. I was whistling. I was like, what is that? And then I realized that it was the Lower Decks theme. And I was like, oh, that's actually a really good Star Trek theme.
It is.
They nailed it.
It's just as good as most of the others.
They nailed it.
It's definitely better than Enterprise.
Well,